Shall we begin?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Hello, and welcome to I Want What She Has, your weekly antidote to the patriarchy, amplifying women's voices and their stories. I'm your host, Teresa Widman, and today is going to be, as Warren just stated, a little bit of a potpourri of things that I'm going to bring into the show today. I thought of it as a bit like a collage, and so in the first hour, I'm kind of drawing on some of the recent happenings in my life, which I'll just mention involved the Sheep and Wool Festival and a friend's album release party, listening party, getting prepared for the full moon this week, and thinking about sisterhood and community, a little bit derivative of what Maria Elena and I spoke about last week. So that's going to happen in the first half of the show today. And then in the second half, I'm really excited to welcome three women who are currently running for office in the town of Hurley, which is a town outside of Kingston here in the Hudson Valley. And those women, Jana Martin is running for town board, Melinda McKnight is running for town supervisor, and Lynn Bailey is running for town clerk and tax collector. And they formed a little bit of a sisterhood of sorts, which I thought was interesting, and I haven't really had a lot of women politicians on the show. Of course, Maria Elena and I talk about politics, at least in one definition of the term, once a month. But I thought it would be interesting to talk to these women about why they wanted to get involved in politics, what it's been like for them, because they've been, some of them have been involved in different ways. Well, they've all been involved in community in different ways. The challenges about working across party lines, all of that kind of stuff. Well, hopefully, we'll see how much time we have to get into it. But that will be happening in the second half of today's show. So for now, I wanted to just acknowledge that I, 2 years ago, had gone to the Sheep and Wool Festival. It is one of my favorite fall activities to do. And just to acknowledge that I know there are some folks who feel that the treatment of animals at these types of events isn't exactly kind or compassionate. And I'm neither endorsing nor making any kind of statement about it all. I think it's an important conversation to have, but I'm not having that conversation in today's show. I'm talking about my joy of going to the Sheep and Wool Festival. And it always happens in October, or at least as long as I've lived here. And it just feels like a fun fall thing to do, right? You're getting your sweaters out. It's starting to get chilly. And if you're a knitter or any type of crafter, you're going to go to this festival and just have sensory overload. And another favorite thing for me during the Sheep and Wool, or during this, during fall, is hot apple cider. So 2 years ago, when I went to the Sheep and Wool Festival, they always have the 4-H Club offering warm beverages and some snacks and water and whatnot. So I went up to get a hot apple cider, and I just noticed that there were a group of young ladies working behind the counter. And so I took the opportunity to just record a quick interview with them. And, you know, it's going to sound out of place because it happened 2 years ago and it happened during the Sheep and Wool Festival. They also refer to the Dutchess County Fair, which is where they do some of their work. And so this is more of just acknowledging their involvement in what they do And putting it on your radar, if you do have children that want to get involved in 4-H, they do have a bunch of different clubs that you can find. I will link to the website for the Dutchess County 4-H Club. And, you know, if you're curious, you can find out more. But for now, we're going to hear my conversation with Michaela Hagerty, Marlia Katuza, and Ruby Friedman.
So I'm here at the Sheep and Wool Festival at the Dutchess County Fairgrounds, and I am talking to three of the members of the Golden Fleece 4-H Sheep Club, Dutchess County. Yes, so I have that right. Do you want to share your name so that everyone knows who I'm talking to?
I'm Michaela Hagerty.
I'm Marlia Katuza.
I'm Ruby Friedman.
And so they're working here behind one of the buildings selling. Well, what are you selling here?
So we have tea, hot chocolate, milk, water, cider, and coffee.
And where does the money from the sales go?
The money goes to a club to help us invest in, like, stuff that we need and go on 4-H field trips and do the stuff that we can so we can show at the Dutchess County Fair.
And so what made you want to get into the 4-H club?
Do you want to start?
Because we love animals, and I think that this club brings our community together of people that love sheep and that farm and that all that, and it's easy to make friends and just to build as a community, I think.
What about you?
I would agree with Ruby. It, like, brings a bunch of people together who like doing the same thing all into one group, and we all help each other, and just we all have something in common, and it helps.
I agree. Full on. The whole thing, like, it makes me so happy to go here and donate this money for education and stuff. And I love doing showing my sheep, and we have market animals and stuff, so it makes you get friends and stuff, and it's just so much fun to be here.
So when did you start working with the sheep? When you joined 4-H, you know, how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing this for about 3 years. I've been showing. This was my first year doing market animals, and we've been doing the milk steak stand for 3 years too. Yes.
And can you just explain for me what a market animal is?
So basically, I go to the Dutchess County Fair and during the summer, and I have a market animal, and we do the weighing class. And if you get blue ribboned in the sale class, then you will be able to get your animal done in the market, in like the auction. So if you get red ribboned, then you could keep your animal or sell it privately. You can really do whatever you want with it, except for going to the auction. I got blue ribbon this year, and I was really happy about that because it was my first year, and I didn't think that would happen. So you get to sell your animals, and there's bidding and stuff, and they have it for all the species, cows, chickens, pigs, rabbits, and the other birds and stuff. So it's really cool to go out there and do that.
Yeah. This might be a silly question, but is it ever hard to let go of your animal once that you sell it?
I think, mostly from my experience, if you, like, name your sheep, and, like, I had this sheep named Aurora, and I worked a lot with her, but she was just a stubborn sheep, and so once I showed her at the fair this year, I didn't think she did as best as I thought she would, so it left me between two things: either keep her and show her next year, or sell her and have her, like, go to market. But I was troubled by this because I said to myself, what was the point in keeping a sheep if I knew she wasn't going to do as well next year? So I think, in my opinion, if you, like, name the sheep, you get really attached to it, yeah, like I've done. So I do get attached to it, yeah, I would say.
What about you?
I don't get as attached as much. I don't work. I work with them a lot, but I don't work with them at home a lot. So I don't get as attached, and I don't name mine because, like, my brother named his last year, and it did not. He wasn't very happy about it when he sold his. So I've just learned, if you don't name them, you can, like, think they have a name, but they really don't. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to get to work with them and stuff. So I really think you shouldn't really name them if you do market animals, because it just, it puts on so much pressure, because you're like, oh, I really want to keep them.
Yeah.
But I've decided not to name them. It just doesn't work for me if I do.
And what about you?
I agree with Michaela. I have a boy sheep who sold this past summer, and I wasn't very attached to him because he was kind of mean. So I don't really have a big attachment with him. But if, with my girl sheep, I'd have a bigger attachment because I work with them a lot more.
What's the hardest thing about taking care of the sheep? What aspect of it?
I think the hardest thing is, like, halter breaking them and, like, getting them ready for the fair. I think that's the hardest part. Not only because, like, you're getting them ready, but also you have a time frame. So it depends on when you do lambing season. So, like, if you do... So we do January, February is generally when our sheep have lambing season. So that gives me, like, till... It's like I have to like mid-March to the fair to only work with my sheep. And then once I get to the fair, I just feel like it's so much pressure because the public is watching you like do your stuff and asking you questions. So it's hard to get stuff done, but I think the stressful thing is just getting the sheep ready throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have thoughts? Is there anything like physically challenging?
Yeah, it's preparing the sheep, shearing them. We had 6 animals at the New York Sheep Show in, I don't know where it was, but we had 6, so we had to shear all of them, and it took all day while we were there. We barely got any breaks. So, and it put, you get, like, sometimes the animals don't like it, so they jump and stuff, and sometimes you get hurt, and so a lot of times it gets, it hurts your body. I also agree with Marley about showing. You have 3 months to get them ready.
About 3 months,
yeah. And but you're also, well, I'm always busy with sports and stuff and clubs. So it really, like, you need to find the time if you're owning an animal to be able to spend time with them, because they need that, really, truly.
I agree with them. I think that, like, if you bring them into the barn or, like, you need to catch them or something like that and then halter training them, it's really hard because, first of all, they're very skittish animals and it takes a lot of time just to put the harness on them. And I think it's hard to break them.
And figure out which way the halter goes on.
Right. Oh, my God, yeah. I still haven't learned that yet. I'm like putting it on.
Just go this way or the other way.
What do you like about doing things like this, selling drinks to everyone who's here at the festival?
My favorite thing is just, like, being a part of 4-H and just selling it with, like, people who have stuff in common with me, and I think the Sheep and Wolf Festival is a great idea just because it's the sheep, there's llamas, alpacas, they're all woolly and stuff, and I think this is the perfect time of year to do it too. I like helping the public and like selling stuff. I've just always liked doing it.
I agree with her. I think that working together with your friends and working with your club is really a nice, even if it's only a couple hours, at least you still get to be with your club members and you can talk to people. And I think it's just a nice opportunity.
I agree with them both. I really like spending time here. I wasn't going to come today, and then I thought, I think I'm going to have a great day, so I decided I was going to come. And we were walking earlier, and I saw people. They had spent like an hour in line, and it just made me so happy to see them, so happy to get in there. They're really excited, and I love helping the public and selling drinks here. It's very fun.
Well, I want to thank you, ladies, for taking the time. Does anybody have anything that's on your mind that you want to share that we didn't talk about? No.
Visit the Dutchess County Fair.
Yeah, right. Visit the Sheep and Wolf Festival here until today, so the rest of the day and tomorrow.
And you'll be at the Dutchess County Fair. That's when you show the sheep, right?
Yeah.
And when is the Dutchess County Fair?
It's usually like August 20th to like the 26th,
5th, maybe? I don't know. Yeah, and they always... In Rhinebeck, they always have like the sign. It says, like, "Go to the Dutchess County Fair like, around that time."
176 Dutchess County Fair,
and it's just so fun to go there and like spend time with your animals.
It is all right. Well, thanks, ladies. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you.
All right, that was Michaela Haggerty, Marlia Katuza, Ruby Friedman. They're all from the Golden Fleece 4-H Sheep Club in Dutchess County. And that was a conversation that I had with them in 2019 when I went to the Sheep and Wool Festival. So mark your calendars for August and October of next year when the Dutchess County Fair happens and when the Sheep and Wool Festival happens. I should say hopefully happens. It was nice to have it back this year. Everything felt pretty safe. It was actually much less crowded, which was also a nice aspect of going to the fair. At least it was less crowded when I went there. So I just thought that it tied in nicely. Obviously, timing-wise, I was reminded of this interview because I went to the fair this weekend, and it tied into this idea of community and specifically sisterhood with them, you know, being a bunch of young girls who are involved in 4-H, but and kind of thinking forward to the second part of the show when I invite the three women who are running for office in Hurley and really this kind of unique sisterhood that they have formed and how they support one another as they're going through this election process. And it all kind of just follows up on what Maria Elena and I have talked about in a lot of our episodes when we talk about spirituality and politics. And it almost always kind of comes back to this idea of community. And, you know, what are the different types of communities that we are involved in? For me, I'm always thinking, you know, somebody being excluded by a community when they don't fit the kind of the criteria of what it's like to be in that community. But thinking about this, like, community shows up in so many different ways and how it really is a very vital part of us being human, at least for most of us. Not everyone thrives or desires to be in community. So I want to acknowledge that. But I just thought it was a nice little story to share their enthusiasm for what they do and doing it together and working at the fair. So we will return to the theme of sisterhood, our community, a little bit later. But I wanted to interject a little full moon astrology. This is a good part of the show to sneak this in. Wednesday is the full moon. And I generally am not a strict subscriber to astrological writings and beliefs, and I've said this before, so I apologize for repeating myself, but it feels important to say it, that what I often do is I scan a couple of different websites to see what they're saying about what's happening in the skies and how it might in turn manifest in our world on the earth. And it's kind of like pulling a tarot card in that sense, that it is really how you interpret it. How does it resonate with you? What is it coaxing you to look more deeply at in your own life? You know, it's hard sometimes to pause and really be aware of what's going on. Where do we want to be going? What am I doing in life? And so the full moon and the new moon are always opportunities for me to just set aside some time to really think about that. And reading the astrology, the horoscopes about the moons just help to kind of prime the pump of thinking about what's going on in my life. So I thought I would read. I probably often read from the Forever Conscious website. They tend to have I don't know how to describe it, but their astrology isn't too overbearing in that sense. It's kind of lighter, and but to me, it still offers different things to be contemplating as we think about our lives and what we're doing in them. So They say October is a big month with lots of cosmic shifts and changes. At the start of the month, we will have 6 planets in retrograde, but by the end, we will have only 2, signifying a change of pace and a shift in the expression of energy that we are working with. When many planets retrograde at the same time as they have been for the last few months, we are encouraged to slow down, reflect, and look back over the past before proceeding ahead, which I will say is interesting because that is not what I have experienced in my own life. It feels like it's been very fast-paced. So I'm actually reading from their October forecast. As a planet shifts out of retrograde, however, we get a buildup of forward-moving energy. Things can feel intense as we do away with the past and fully step into the new energies that are waiting for us. October not only brings a line up of 4 planets stationing direct, but we also experience the annual conjunction of the Sun and Mars. Mars will travel along with the Sun for most of the month, shining down its high energy influence. And Mars is considered the fearless warrior, and its energy can bring momentum, motivation, and the desire to act. As Mars is the planet of energy, we may have to watch our energy levels this month. We may find ourselves feeling burnt out and overwhelmed if we push too hard or use this Mars energy to do just a little too much. Mars energy can sometimes trigger underlying anger, restlessness, and frustration. So that's something else to keep in mind all through the month. Be sure to give yourself some healthy outlets if you find yourself starting to feel this way. The Aries full moon on October 20th is also going to offer an intense stream of energy as it activates a T-square configuration between the Sun and Mars, the moon, and the planet of death and rebirth, Pluto. And I think it's a funny little aside. Yesterday, I was doing an outdoor gong bath, and it's a lot of effort for me to move all of my equipment, my 5 gongs plus multiple, 7 bowls and drums and all the complimentary things that come along with it. So I was just going to bring 2 big gongs and a little one, my little Venus. And people are probably going to think I'm nuts for saying this, but my friend who was organizing it texted me as I was about to leave and head over to her house and said, well, I should say, as I was packing up the gongs, I was bringing Earth and I was bringing my symphonic. And I thought, you know what? I know Pluto is a part of this full moon energy. I should really bring Pluto because I have a Pluto gong. But I was like, no, it's just too much. I don't need all of them. It's fine. It'll be fine. And as I was walking out the door, my friend texted me and was like, please, can you please bring another gong? We're going to have a lot of people here. I want the sound to be, you know, just right. And I was like, see, Pluto wanted to show up and come along. He was trying to tell me that earlier in the day. So that's my little Pluto story. As I continue here reading, this is bound to be a highly transformative full moon and perhaps one that stirs a big wave of energy in our lives. It seems that things are intensifying and perhaps reaching a breaking point of some kind. Even though this sounds a little overwhelming, October appears to be a time where we are forced to take action, step up, and make changes. Think of this energy like the universe giving you a little push, forcing you to act on something that has most likely needed your attention for some time. October ends with Halloween, which gets its roots from the pagan festival of Samhain. This is a time where the veil between worlds is believed to be thin, and we can access higher realms with greater ease. And allow me to interpret that in my own understanding, which is we live in the physical realm. It's very easy for us to identify with the physical nature of everything that's around us. I have a table in front of me, my arm, all of this stuff. There are other energetic realms, whether you believe in an afterlife and spirits or intuition or just the fact that we can't see or hear all the frequencies that are actually happening all around us because of the way our eyes and ears were designed, so that there are these subtle other ways of receiving information, and when the veil is thin, we can start to access these other realms. I don't know exactly why, but that's my interpretation of that. The Pleiades constellation, which is also synonymous with death and rebirth, is also high in the sky at this time of year, which is also said to signify and amplify these Samhain energies. So that was their October summary, which a little late in sharing that. But the where is it? Their moon, Aries full moon write-up is quite lengthy, so I won't read all of it, but I'm going to at least plant a seed right now to be thinking about what it is that you are yearning for. It's this Mars energy is kind of perhaps making us feel aggressive or controlling, or just having like, it's almost like you're fiercely defending whatever it is inside of your heart you want to happen. And sometimes it manifests outwardly as anger or frustration. But really, if we can trace it back to that seed of what's in our heart space, we can be reminded of really the beauty and the innocence of that. So I will read more about the full moon. But first, we're going to hear a song. I happen to go to Sarah Parada's listening party this past weekend. And Sarah was on the show number 17, way back in the day when Shauna and I were doing this together. And I think B.A. Miale was on the show with her, who does projections for Shauna's live performances. And Sarah was working on the album. This was back in May of 2018, I think. So she has released it. It's out in the world. The album is called Blue to Gold. So we're going to listen to two songs of hers today in honor of her album release. And the first of these songs is titled Circles.
Just below the surface of the breaking ground, here comes the morning to make it all new. There's a red sun rising out of the blue.
That is the new Sarah Parata song called Circles off of her newly released album Blue to Gold, which just released on Friday. And Sarah was a guest, as I mentioned, back in 2018, early days, show number 17. I think we're on like 194 today. Many, many moons ago. So we're going to hear another song by Sarah, but first I wanted to just dip back into the full moon astrology and share more from Forever Conscious. I link to the full report in the show notes. The astrologer, who is it who writes for this? Tanaz, says that this configuration of energy can create a building of tension, but sometimes we need tension in order to inspire action. Sometimes it takes feeling stretched to our limits in order to put your foot down, speak your truth, set boundaries, and act in an effort to change your situation. In essence, that is what this full moon is calling us to do. It is calling for us to take affirmative action, but this is where it gets a bit tricky. With Mars, Pluto, and Eris involved, sometimes it can be hard to know what action to take. Sometimes these planetary forces can see us acting from a place of ego or in an effort to gain control. Sometimes these planetary forces can trigger our darker, more heated emotions, causing us to lash out or perhaps be too forceful. It can help to keep all of this in mind under the energies of the Aries full moon, but don't let this prevent you from taking action if it feels like the right thing to do. This is very assertive energy, and sometimes we do have to be firm, stand our ground, and communicate what we need. And I just want to add in here that you can really do it with compassion. You don't have to be angry necessarily. You can just be firm. Setting boundaries can be a hard thing to do, but if you, as I said earlier, kind of dip into that source of why it is you want to do this thing that you need to have a boundary around, it really comes from this place of like innocence and purity and authenticity and joy, and to just realize that you can move through it with compassion. So if you are faced with making some tough decisions under this full moon, there are a few things that can help. The first is to look to see where you may be leading with fear in the driver's seat. Mars is the fearless warrior, and when its energy is strong, it can be a good time to overcome some of our deep-seated fears. It can be a good time to put on our warrior helmet and find a new level of confidence. If you have to take some action, think about where fear might be guiding your decisions and see if any of that fear is justified or simply linked to insecurities from your past. See if you can acknowledge the fear, for on the other side of it, you may just find the next step to take. Another tip under the energy of this Aries full moon is to think about the ways you have transformed and rebirthed yourself over the course of the year. What would the new you do? What do you want to be in this situation? And it goes on. I'll just say that I was reminded of this yesterday at the sound bath. Somebody had mentioned that they had come to the same place where I did a sound bath the year before, and how they really were able to see the difference of where they, how far they have come, how much has changed in their life. And so maybe that's what you do on Wednesday, is you pause and you just spend a little time thinking about what you were doing last October and how perhaps you've transformed even through challenges, experiencing challenges and whatnot. So there's more to be said about the full moon, but for now, we are going to listen to another song by Sarah Parata. This one is the title track, Blue to Gold. Blue to Gold from Sarah Parada's new album by the same name. And I will link to her information in the show notes. I was inspired by the combination of music and community in today's conversation that I wanted to mention that there is a cool ukulele group that meets in Rosendale on Wednesdays. I found out about it from a pal, Cal Patch, who was also a past guest. Oops, let me turn off my computer sound. And she invited me. Oh, shoot, my video's not working. Okay, so she invited me to join the uke group, and I've been going on many Wednesdays as much as I can, and it's really super fun. It's really friendly to beginners, so if it is not something that you are feeling confident about, I say please just try it out and go. Most of the songs are done, playing like the standard F and A and D and G and C. And if it gets too complicated, well, then you just sing along instead of playing. It's a lot of fun. And so we meet on Wednesdays from 6 to about 7:30. And I'll include the link to the Facebook group that is organizing the events. And just a shout out to Jen Sturial. I might be mispronouncing her last name. She organized it. And Sturiale, maybe? She's the organizer, and although she doesn't like to think of herself as the leader of the group, a big shout out to her and all of her efforts for doing that, because it's bringing lots of joy to many people, including myself. Okay, one other little tidbit that I want to acknowledge. I was on a conference call earlier today with the Caring Majority Rising. I have spoken about them in the past on this show, and they are a group who organizes on behalf of home care workers and the folks who need home care, healthcare workers. And there's a big push. They're making a big push right now in New York State to raise the minimum wage for home healthcare workers. As you may have heard, I've had Gemma on the show in the past, and I've talked about it. There is potentially a very large crisis looming with a lack of home health care workers. I don't even know where to start. There's so much to say. But not only is it just, you know, human dignity and decency to pay these folks a decent wage, some of them making $13 an hour and driving multiple hours to get to a home of somebody they care for and not being paid for the time that they're driving, not having benefits. I mean, it's just outrageous. And this is my own little personal feeling about it, that it is completely sexist, because it is historically thought of as being women's work. And because of that, it is not valued in society. It's not made a budget priority. The call that I was on earlier was a roundtable featuring several of assembly members and state senators from New York State and those who've been supporting the bill. I just offer that because I will link to the recording of the conversation that was had earlier, but if you have any spare time at all that you can give to this organization, Caring Majority Rising, the Domestic Workers Hand in Hand Network, they are doing amazing and important work, and I just feel very strongly about trying to support them in any way possible. So I'll link to that information in the show notes, and yeah, that's what I'll say. They say it better than I do, but it's something that's important. Okay, we're going to play. I was driving into town today, and I was thinking about the show, and I was thinking about sisterhood, and I just, as my brain often works, a song came in And it's the song Sisters with Rosemary Clooney. And I thought, well, I kind of have to play this song. It actually is a song. I feel like Shauna and I used to sing it a lot, jokingly, because we've just been through a lot together through the volunteering of O Positive and then the show and everything. And I feel like, if memory serves me, we used to sing it jokingly together. But it is a favorite song. It makes me feel happy. And it reminded me that in our Uke group, we actually played a song from, I think it's White Christmas, The Best Things Happen When You're Dancing, which you would not think you could play on a ukulele, but we did it last week in the Uke group. So all of these things are just coming together so that we could listen to the song before. We'll listen to the song, we'll hear some words from our community, and then I will be back to welcome the ladies who are running for office in the town of Hurley. So here we go, in honor of sisterhood.
I'm here to keep my eye on her, caring, sharing, every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman arrived from Rome, she wore the dress and I stayed home. All kinds of weather, we stick together, the same in the rain or sun. Two different faces, but in tight places, we think and we act as one. Those who seen us know that not a thing can come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can. Lord, help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord, help the sister who comes between me and my man.
You're listening to I Want What She Has on Radio Kingston, WKNY, AM 1490, FM 107.9 in Kingston, New York.
All right, the moment we've been waiting for. I'm excited to welcome these three ladies who are all running for office in the town of Hurley. We're going to have a fun little conversation about what it's like to run for office. So let me introduce them a little bit more with some more detail than I did earlier in today's show. Jana Martin has been active in Ulster County community issues since making it her home in 2000. She is a content director and editor for green and advanced technology firms and an author published by the New York Times, Forbes, Simon & Schuster, and Random House. She has taught writing at SUNY New Paltz and Word Cafe in Woodstock and Kingston. She was an active member of Eagle Valley Search Dogs Canine Search and Rescue Team, is a runner and equestrian, excuse me, tongue twister for me, and a proud stepmom to two boys. She is running for town board in Hurley. Melinda McKnight grew up in the hamlet of Port Ewan and attended Kingston High School. Upon graduating, she earned an AS degree in journalism from SUNY Ulster, a BA in English, and an MA in public history from SUNY Albany. She spent her early career in nonprofit administration, where she managed all aspects of operations, including developing exhibits and special events, negotiating contracts, grant writing, budgeting, and human resources. She has served as adjunct faculty at SUNY Ulster, taught continuing education classes at Ulster BOCES, and provided a 12-week character development program based on the Virtues Project at a medium security New York State prison. Since 2010, she has worked in the field of building performance in a variety of roles in a family-owned company that transitions homes and businesses off fossil fuels. Her current role is vice president and chief financial officer. She currently serves as vice president of Klein Esopus Historical Society Museum. She's a board member of Citizens for Local Power and councilperson on the Town of Hurley Town Board. As a member of the Hurley Town Board, Melinda worked across party lines in writing and passing a short-term rental law and in creating a zoning task force and a climate smart task force. She is running for Hurley Town Supervisor. And last but not least, Lynn Bailey grew up in a rural suburban area of Suffolk County and moved to New York City in 1976, starting her long and diverse professional career. In 2013, she purchased her home in Hurley, and in recent years, Lynn has been very involved in community matters, volunteers for the Zoning Task Force, and is the communications manager of the Hurley Climate Smart Task Force. Ms. Bailey has long cultivated service-oriented practices and is eager for the opportunity to serve her community and its residents in the ways she knows best, using modern technology and methods, impeccable record-keeping, and communication skills for the improvement of local government operations, with the respect and diligence that all residents merit. She is running for Hurley Town Clerk and Tax Collector. Thank you, ladies, for making time to come on the show today.
Great to be here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So there's so much we could talk about, but I'd like to just ask this question of each of you as to why it was that you wanted to get involved in politics. Anyone want to go first on that one?
Melinda?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I can go first. I wouldn't say that I ever really wanted to be involved in politics. For me, it really is about understanding the issues of community and working to solve problems. The catalyst for the most recent decision to run for supervisor was kind of a combination of issues regarding a local development that was proposed where I didn't really feel like the local government was listening. And also, I live in a neighborhood where there's a privately owned water company that provides our water. And the, you know, the solutions to that are kind of complicated and thorny, but there also wasn't a lot of traction or, you know, paying attention by the local government. So that's kind of the catalyst for me. The whole political thing, I actually don't really consider myself a politician. No, I really consider myself a public servant. I really do believe that if you get elected to public office, you check your ego and your party affiliation at the front door.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. I think I'll echo that. I mean, I wanted to get involved because I already was involved, and I saw a lot of instances where people didn't feel like they were getting listened to at meetings, and where really good points would be brought up and then just completely ignored. I saw mistakes made, obvious mistakes with policy and with procedures, and I was on the zoning board and was astonished at some of the criteria we were using to make decisions. And when I questioned that, the response I was given was, you know, everything from too much information to, oh, no, this is how we do it. And I felt like there's got to be a better way. So to me, it's not politics. I mean, I think the problem has been politics. I think it's really got to be about community.
Thank you, Jenna. It's interesting. I think I mentioned to the three of you that I do a monthly show with Maria Elena Farrar, and we talk about politics and spirituality, and really the idea of reconnecting to politics as the art of living together. And yeah. And we've kind of gotten away from that. So what I'm hearing from you is more of a return to that. Lynn, what about you? What prompted you to get involved in this way?
So I've always actually been interested in political science. But when I lived in Amawalk, which is in the town of Somers, you know, when something starts going on in your back door, you know, it requires your attention no matter what else is going on in your life. And there was a restaurant that was now defunct and had been so, and there was a proposal to make it a restaurant again, but it was supposed to revert to its original residential zoning since the grandfather clause was expired now, you know, once after 2 years. And so I was, and I lived very close to it, as did a couple other people. So, you know, we got the whole neighborhood together. We went to the meetings. And in this case, it was the zoning board that heard special permits, and we succeeded. And up here, you know, up here in Hurley, similarly, there was something going on in the neighborhood. I wasn't here all the time then, so before then, because I probably would have had a lot more to say about the cell phone tower they also put up down there, which I seem to have passed special legislation for down my street. Anyway, so, you know, we got more involved in it. And really, like the other two women said, we were not being listened to. I mean, it didn't matter what the CAC said or what the studies they already had paid for had said about these things. We've had groundwater studies that were done 15 years ago. They weren't paying attention to anything but anything outside of their little bubble. And I also, when Melinda started these, we got the go-ahead for the Climate Smart Task Force. I was, I'm not an actual member of the CAC, but I attend a lot of their meetings as they do some of the other meetings. And I immediately jumped on that because I had the time in my life to really do that. And I had skills that they could really use. And, you know, what could be better, you know, being able to serve your town and your community and have the skill set that they really need. So I'm really happy about that.
Thank you, Lynn. You know, one of the things that what I'm hearing you all talk about reminds me of is just the amount of time and effort that kind of goes into watching what's happening in the government and the effort that you have to and the persistence of showing up to make sure that, you know, people are watching and holding the decision makers accountable, which to me as a, you know, your everyday citizen feels exhausting sometimes. And I know that I have kind of walked away from certain things because I'm just like, I don't have the time to handle this anymore. Like there's other things. And so I wonder if you can comment at all about yourselves and how you've been able to do that, to make the time to do these things, or if it feels more appropriate to what you would say to your constituents or folks who are out there like me who want to be involved in these things but find it very hard to put the time and effort in to really make a difference. Who wants to
take that?
We're trying to be so polite with each other.
It is tough, you know, because, but it's incredibly important, especially the first thing you need to do is go to the town's website, whatever town you're in, village or city, and sign up to be notified of what's going on, you know. And the smaller the town, the more important your particular participation is. Melinda is fond of quoting Michael Moore, you know, democracy is not a spectator sport. It's our scrutiny that really makes it a democracy. It's the auditing process. It's, are you being represented? And who are you going to vote for next time to make sure that you are? And, you know, a lot of these meetings some meetings only take an hour, some take two. Some of them are great, great theater. I'd rather watch them than something on TV, you know. We're lucky that a lot of them are being recorded now. And some of them you can watch as they're happening on Zoom. And if you know what's on the agenda, you can take particular attention to that, you know. So it's really checking the agendas and making sure that there's if there's something on there that you need to, that you feel compelled about, to show up and let them know.
It's so true. That's something that happens that I've seen around here a lot, which is that when there's an issue that comes up that people realize, oh my gosh, you know, this could be really bad, or we don't understand this, or whatever, if they know there's a meeting, they can go to the meeting. And once you're at one or two meetings, you start to realize how things are working, and you start to realize that there is actually room to speak up. You know, there's public be heard sessions, there's public comment sessions, that you are given a voice in many of these meetings. The issue becomes when you use your voice and, you know, you skip dinner and you go there and you stand up there and you say your statement, and then it just seems to be completely ignored. So I think that becomes heartbreaking, and that becomes exhausting, and that's what is kind of, I mean, I really want to change that as much as I can, because if you invite people to participate and you say, well, you're not there, you should be there, there ought to be something rewarding for it. It can't just be sitting there watching your town sell the town out from underneath you, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems is the lack of dialogue.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a decision made that I was compelled to, with a couple of my neighbors, to sue them, do an Article 78 proceeding, which we did, we prevailed on that, by the way. You know, but there was ever any dialogue. Nobody sits down and like in a planning board, you have a developer, you have the board, and they don't work out anything about, you know, trying to bring both sides together. They just impose something on the community after they do have public hearings. And, you know, recently, you know, this happened here in West Hurley. I don't even think that they didn't even make a condition to put aside this trail. Melinda probably knows exactly what that trail is. There was a trail on the property that the community used all the time, and I didn't see that as part of the conditions of approval.
It had to remain recreational, but only for the owners of the condos, if it does
happen. Right. Basically, so they took it away from the rest of the community that's been using it for decades. Right?
Yeah. So I would just say that, you know, many of us are accustomed to paying attention to national news and getting kind of stirred up about those issues. And when the reality is that it's the issues that happen locally in your city or your town that have the most profound impact on your everyday life. And if we can shift some of that bandwidth to local issues, because that's where it really does matter. In fact, you know, local elections can be won or lost on a handful of votes or less. You know, so that's where you really can make a difference. And what I would say about, you know, when municipalities fail to listen to the people, it usually is a result of, you know, really needing to follow the money. Because oftentimes what I see is that the money and the power wins out. And I've taken an awful lot of heat just because of my own private opinions about, you know, how I think county funds should be used or not used. And, you know, folks in my own party are not happy with me because I was just vocal as a private citizen when my voice really... I don't have any impact on how county money is spent. So, I mean, I think that's the other thing. I think when you're a woman, sometimes, you know, you kind of take a little, maybe extra heat or...
A little.
Maybe a lot. I was being generous. it's not hard to be... I mean, it's not hard. It is hard to be in the arena where it's, you know, traditionally been very dominated by men.
Well, two things that happened. One is if you start speaking up because things are already done and you're objecting to it, then you're accused of being partisan and you're accused of throwing, you know, partisan politics into the mix, when the reality is that they just sort of went ahead and did what they wanted to do unilaterally with no sense of, you know, both sides. The other part is that if you say that and you're a woman, you're also a troublemaker, a problem, outspoken, insensitive, inconsiderate, you know, difficult. Difficult. So you're talking to three women who've been labeled difficult. And all that really means is that we have the bandwidth and the passion to run for office and try to do better. And we all are used to working with lots of different kinds of other people.
That's right.
All our lives.
Yeah, it sounds to me that it's when there is a determination, like when you are committed to an issue and you're persistent about it and you're not letting up, that's when these names start to come up. When truthfully, your efforts are really just try to keep people accountable to their jobs and maybe an ethical way of doing their jobs. I mean, it's hard to have this conversation without going into like some real details about experiences, but we don't have a lot of time to do that. I'm just, you know, I'm reminded I've been more involved with Kingston politics because I've had a connection here and just watching how large construction projects get approved and, you know, zoning changes happen. And from, I will say very honestly, from an outsider's perspective, it does feel like an old boys club that makes things happen. And to me, even saying that, I feel like I run the risk of being perceived as being a complaining female that, you know, maybe I don't understand the way things have to work in the world. And I'm not even running for office, so I can't imagine what the three of you have to go through on a regular basis when you're putting yourselves out there and really making yourselves, you know, inserting yourselves in the process.
Let's just take gender out of it for one second, though.
Yeah.
You were mentioning that I was on a search and rescue team with my canine. So when you're a responder to an emergency, you have to follow very specific procedures and processes and protocols, and you have to follow them. Sometimes it's a matter of life and death. It could be a crime scene, and if you don't do it the right way, you're going to disturb the crime scene. You know, there's all sorts of things that come into it. So I'm always also thinking about issues of safety, issues of kindness, issues of clarity, and not screwing it up for the future. So it's not just about the, you know, the old boys network versus these new strident women that have come along. It's also a sense of accountability and of respecting a process. And if the process isn't good enough, how can you make it better? You know, that's what Melinda's and Lynn are doing with the zoning task force, for instance. So if you take gender out of it, you know, and I think we've internalized some of that projection, and I think we all have permission to let it go. But it's not just about, you know, us versus them or anything like that. It's really about being safe, being kind, being right, being proper, and you know, respecting procedure.
Thank you for saying that, Jana. It's very important. All right. Returning to the conversation with Jana Martin. I apologize for saying her first name incorrectly.
Okay.
Melinda McKnight and Lynn Bailey, who are running for office in Hurley. And one of the things that I am particularly curious about, and we don't have to spend too much time on it, but it just feels like the political climate that we have been living in for the past several years has been so divisive. And to the to the extent that people have perhaps even tuned out. It's like you're either fiercely in it and you want to fight and brawl, or you're kind of like, I can't deal with it anymore and I just don't want to be bothered by these politicians. So I'm curious, because all of you have worked in some capacity, you know, community organizing, working on task force, involved in local government. How do you handle the divisiveness, and how do you work to reach across the party divide in what you're doing?
Well, I mean, for me, I think that it's a couple of things. So the first is that issues, local issues, really do cut across party lines. So, you know, I've been out canvassing or at community meetings, and you know, there are people who give voice to their opinion, and maybe I don't agree with them, but on a lot of points. But at the end of the day, we all really want clean water, and you know, we want our streets to be safe. We don't want to be impacted by a tremendous amount of extra traffic that could present a danger. We all want access to you know, the rail trail that's across 28, but we can't seem to get there because it's not safe without playing the game of chicken. So there's that. I mean, I know that I've had support on both sides, from both sides of the aisle on that. And also, you know, I kind of am pretty pleased when I can speak to somebody who is has very different views from me, but we can agree that, you know, conversation needs to be respectful, and that we're, you know, we all live in community together. And I mean, granted, not everyone is able to do that, especially if it's kind of an emotionally charged situation, but I've had some, you know, some success with that. And also maybe not, you know, trying to stay away from thinking about somebody of the opposing party as a, you know, bad person, or, you know, poor motives, or something like that, because it's not helpful. And at the end of the day, we're all humans, right? And we really just need to be kind to one another. Kindness changes things.
Thanks for that, Melinda. And I'll just interject. It's interesting. Last week on the show, Maria and Lena and I were talking about how can we practice actually having compassion for people who we historically bristle about. And it's really fascinating to watch myself notice who I am immediately making assessment about and judging, and how in your role as elected officials, how that really can create a barrier right at the outset. So I really appreciate what you're saying there, to try to drop those maybe stereotypes and judgments and really focus on the issues. But Lynn, were you going to say something?
Yeah. You know, we live in a town that has that's very diverse. We're not all Republicans and we're not all Democrats. It's almost a half and half kind of town. So but we don't walk around with labels saying I'm a Democrat or I'm a this or I think this way. You know, we're here about the community. And I'm appalled when I see some remarks about, I was told that if I got elected to be the town clerk, that so-and-so would probably just quit. And I'm like, why would they do that? Because they're in a different party? I mean, and that just sounds so absurd to me. I mean, I'm just here, if I'm the town clerk, I'm here to do a job. I'm here to do it equally for everybody. You know, it doesn't matter what party you are, or it has no bearing whatsoever on how I'm going to treat you. You're one of my neighbors, and that's what counts. I mean, I have friends who think differently, and, you know, we find ways to talk about these things, because I think it's important to understand somebody else's point of view. And in a local level, like I've talked to the chair of the CAC, who is in a different party than I am. I mean, it doesn't really matter. You know, we have common ground on what we want to see happen in our community. Like Melinda said, it's about safety. It's about protecting our resources. You know, we have water issues in different spots of the town, and, you know, we need to protect that. We need to develop ways to have smart development in the town and not just development for the sake of development. So all of those things are important, and bringing everybody's voice in is important. At the local level, we don't decide how many people get admitted into the country as a refugee or not. You know, it doesn't matter. Or, you know, some of the other things that are going on. You know, if they pass certain kinds of legislation, then, you know, some of that money might trickle to the town, like the Resource Recovery Act. The town is going to pick up about $660,000. Mm-hmm. And I've yet to really see them poll the residents as to what the possibilities are for using that money and to get input from everybody on how we should do that. So, you know, there's a lot of things that could be improved as far as, you know, getting the community more engaged and coming to consensus about what we really want to see for the town, which is another thing that's happening. There's a comprehensive review committee going to put together the new town plan. It hasn't been updated in 20 years. There's a survey online that people can find if they go to the townofhurley.org website, and they should get copies in the mail soon. And that information is really important because it's going to come from people with their what they want to see in the town, and then from there, you know, the legislators and can move forward on resolutions that will reflect what the people of all the people of the town think should be going on here.
Thank you, Lynn. Yep, Jana.
Another thing that I think is really funny is you can't. It's too small a town to be completely polarized. I mean, right. The last 4 years, I think you're totally right. There's been a lot of polarization. It's been really, really sad. I don't think, you know, didn't used to be this bad. But if I'm on the town board, I represent the town. I don't just represent 46.2% of the town who happen to have, you know, registered as Democrats. I don't represent, you know, it's just not the way it works. I represent the whole town. And I've been at meetings where the people who've sort of gotten up and said things that were the most stirring and really the kind of brilliant ideas, at first glance, I would not think that they would come up with them. I would not think that they would think that way. And I even went up to someone afterwards and I said, I completely agree with you. I think this is brilliant. And he said, I never thought you would think that. So if there's so much of that going on, yeah. If there's more dialogue, if there's more participation, if we're all together in the same room more, that doesn't happen so much. That old us and them doesn't happen because it's all us together.
Yeah, Jana, that's true. I think to some degree that goes on everywhere, but I think that Hurley is its own kind of animal in the sense yeah. that the Ashokan Reservoir literally sliced our town in half. Mm-hmm. And I would say the majority of those in positions of power in the last probably 30 years, majority have kind of come from the Kingston side or the, you know, the south of 28 side. And there's a very much in us and them, you know, the old part, what they consider the old part of town where the old stone houses are, you know, they seem to be very those in power wanted to maintain that power. And I think that they looked at the people in West Hurley and Woodstock and Glenford as more part of Woodstock. You know, maybe that makes sense in terms of geography, but
the Ripple Rousers.
But you know, the bottom line is we are one town. Yeah. We all need to work together. It's a pretty diverse town. You know, we have mountain sides and and water in old parts of town and newer parts of town. And but at the end of the day, none of that should matter.
Yes, Niana.
All I was going to add was it can't matter. We won't get anything done.
Right.
It's interesting to watch the national politics on that level. I mean, that's a bigger conversation, but it's a hard conversation to have with everyone, to ask people to compromise in order to collaborate more, because it does feel like some people have to let go of their very strong positions. I don't know. It's an interesting brain exercise for me, because I certainly align with certain beliefs that I feel like are just unprincipled good. Like, we don't pollute the earth, right? Shouldn't we all agree to that? But then there are some people who think that there might be other interests that outweigh it. And it becomes very hard for me to find a way to compromise in that situation. So I applaud you all for taking on the responsibility of trying to bridge the gap there. But it is interesting, the complexities when it comes to getting people to agree. The one thing that comes to mind is, and not to go back to gender, but it does feel like historically female-bodied people have been more prone to collaboration and community thinking, whereas male-bodied individuals have been leaders, dictators. I am the great mind. I impose my thoughts and organization on you. And we've seen a lot of women, that's a big generalization, that's my statement, nobody else here is saying that. But a big thing that we're talking about is how can women enter the government more? And we're seeing more and more women getting involved in politics and organizing and elected office. And so I'd be curious just to hear from each of you what it's been like to run for elective office. And it doesn't have to relate to your gender at all, but if there were kind of words of wisdom for other women or men who might be listening to the show who are thinking about wanting to get involved, and what have you learned in this process that you would like to share with them, just as kind of like words of encouragement or any things that you've learned about the challenges of running for office?
You know that old, it's not even an adage, but that, you know, comparison that was done where women, if they won't apply for a job if they don't think they're 100% qualified, and men will apply for a job if they're, I don't know, it's like 50% qualified or less. I think often as women, we sell ourselves short. We're also busy trying to not, you know, make trouble or make people mad or incur wrath or something. So we just naturally start receding. And actually, this is a time when, you know, this town needs its smart women more than ever. This county needs its smart women more than ever. This state needs its smart women. I mean, look at who's stepped up. It's really important. So I think, you know, you're probably more qualified than you think you are. When you're in office or when you're on a board, there's a lot of training you do and you learn things you didn't know. They don't expect you to come in with a huge portfolio of knowledge. So don't sell yourself short. If you're interested in it, go for it.
Thanks, Yana. Lynn or Melinda, do you want to add anything?
Well, I'd have to agree with that. And I would say that here in Hurley is a very unique opportunity because there's only about 6,500 residents in the whole town. There's about, I think, 4,900 registered voters. You have opportunity in this town to be heard. It's not a big city. You know, we need volunteers. There's so much volunteer power that goes on in local government. It's surprising. Yeah. But your planning board, your comprehensive review committee, the climate smart task force, the zoning board, the communications committee, these are all volunteers from the town. Okay. And you know, it's a great way to serve, you know, even if you only have 6 hours in a month, let's say, you know, I mean, you can still do something if you know, there's a place for your skills in one of these boards or one of these task forces or committees, and that's important. And you know, and just going to the, you know, paying attention to a couple of issues, one of these things you probably have an interest in, and stepping up to do that is the first step. And in actually running is a new experience for me and for Yana. You know, but I've been in the business world for almost 50 years now. Okay. Yeah. I'm used to talking to people. I have a business that, established a face painting, you know, business dealing with the public about, 15 or back in 2007. You know, I've also been a mortgage officer and a technology teacher. You know, I switched over from being in finance when computers came out to learning all about the software and got more involved in doing that. And that technology is second nature to me. You know, so that's my skill set. I'm able to make the website for the Climate Smart Task Force. I was able to do the designing of the mailers that we sent out. And I'm just thrilled that, you know, somebody could use these skills that I have and I can volunteer to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great sense of accomplishment, or, you know, just to know that, you know, you have something to contribute. And not everybody can do what I do, but they can do other things, you know? Yeah. So we sort of divvy up the tasks upon what your skill set is and work together to get something done. Even if it's doing a little research or doing a survey or reading, doing a little, you know, the research. Research is very important in some of these committees. So if you have if you could spend a little time looking up a few things, just, you know, because everybody else is a lot of people are still working. You know, they have jobs and they have families and can't do everything, but you can do something, and yeah, that something counts. So that's the first step. And the actual running, we're fortunate that there's a party there's a Democratic committee in the town of Hurley that helped make things a little bit easier for all of us and, you know, pool their knowledge and the resources together. So that was very helpful here. Also, Eleanor's Legacy is a foundation that helps women candidates, and we're getting some help from them. They endorsed me and Melinda. You know, so that's also been helpful. So there's some organizations out there that can help you feel more comfortable. And like Yana said, it's nobody's perfect. I mean, who says the people that are up there know everything? You know, do they have any special qualifications? You know, they had an interest, they have something that they are good at, and you bring that to the table. And all those things matter. Everybody has their own gifts, and we need to appreciate that. And, you know, in the small town, it's really important to step up and throw in some of your time and energy to help run things.
Okay, so Melinda, did you want to add something to that question?
Yes, absolutely. You know, as a historian, I can't help but think that, you know, our culture is really so incredibly focused on individual rights that women are really uniquely suited, I think, to step up into positions of leadership, because they have learned that to be able to put their own needs aside and to really think about others and to really be more inclusive and consider, you know, diverse voices and things. I think women have, for the most part, have practiced that in their life in one way or another. I would say that, you know, one thing that I've learned is to really not care so much about what people think of me. You know, I, at the end of the day, have to be able to, you know, put my head down at night and sleep well and know that I did the best that I could and that I was kind and that I, you know, just did the best I could to make good decisions and balance the needs of everyone in the community, and that it's really not, you know, with rights, with individual rights comes responsibility. And, you know, we really, I think we need to get back to balancing individual rights with the common good. You know, that's a really old concept that really, I think that there's a lot of validity there, and we really need to think about how what we do impacts other people.
We're here.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that I think when Lynn was kind of very eloquently sharing all the ways that you can get involved in local government, it made me think that if more people did get involved, even if it's in very small ways, how it gives you a different sense of community. Like, you have a different connection, not only to your community, but how it's shaped and who's involved in it. And you all have been, you know, doing this for quite some time. So maybe this is a hard question to answer, but I wonder if you have reflected at all about how it's changed your opinion about what community is and how it's enhanced your life potentially being involved in this way.
I heard you talking about community on your last show, and you know, we all have a number of communities in our lives, right? Through work or through some church, you know, I had have a community down in Bronxville, a faith-based community. The street where you live on, the people you work with. So the town of Hurley doesn't have any community centers. It doesn't have a common school district. It's hard to get to know everybody. So really, coming together through the government has been a great way for me to know other people in my community. I mean, I have some friends here too, but now I have more friends. You know, I've met people by doing this work. And, you know, I'd like to see us have more of a Hurley Day that, you know, brings both sides of towns together. We are one town. You know, we need to work on being that community and bridging the gaps and thinking about the people from West Hurley and Old Hurley. And down here, I'm on, like, my street is partially goes into Rosendale. You know, some people have derided the street because there's some people who own trailers here. You know, they're part of Hurley too. All right. They saved their money, bought their little pieces of land and put trailers on that. All right, they're no less worthy of our time and attention than the guy sitting on the hill in a $1 million house. And we need more of that. We need more of everybody, and we need to look out for everybody.
I think one amazing thing that's happened by getting involved is I've met these two amazing women, these two brilliant women. It's really inspiring. And there are times when, you know, you're dealing with some snark or smugness or power moves from the other side, let's say, and knowing that there's this group of great sisters is just, it's reassuring, it's empowering, and it's also surprising. I never expected to find that. Never. When I walked into the first meeting at the West Hurley Firehouse, I had no idea. And that was years ago. So you find a lot by getting involved. You really do.
It's empowering.
Yeah.
So this idea of sisterhood, is it something that it doesn't sound to me that it was intentionally formed, but it's a value that you are noticing as you're moving through this process together. Do you think it's something that could be more intentionally cultivated amongst women when it comes to politics or government?
I think it should be. I think if we can sort of inspire other women to get more involved, you know, I mean, sometimes the concept of a sisterhood is sort of like a few women standing over there in dark skirts, you know, and but the truth is there's a lot of us, there's a lot of women, you know, so it's really like inspiring other women to use their voice and use their energy.
And to support one another.
Yes, very much so.
And work together.
Yeah.
Because we're one community here and we need each other.
And I guess maybe I'll offer this, even though I'm not in the sisterhood, but I would say from an outsider's observation, you know, it's not necessarily to exclude non-sisters, right? Non-female identifying. But what I'm hearing is that there are perhaps unique experiences that you have as women, as female identifying individuals, that it is helpful to have somebody else who is also in your shoes to be able to discuss things, yes, to perhaps lean on, to collaborate with. That's what I'm hearing is like the benefit of the sisterhood. Do any of you want to comment on that or correct me?
I'm not used to not being paid attention to. Okay. I mean, I've been single most of my life. I've had to take care of myself. I've been involved in businesses that are mostly full of men. You know, I'm a crucial part of that. And I don't take it lightly if people are going to ignore me. And I strongly support other people who oftentimes are women to be empowered. This is a democracy. We all have an equal say. So make your say, yeah, and get involved and be a part of the town.
So tell me a little bit, when is early voting happening? Has it started already?
It starts October 23rd.
Okay.
And there are...
Go ahead. Yeah.
There are 6 ballot propositions on the back of the ballot. So it's important for folks to... and they're long. So if, you know... do a little advanced preparation and go to the Board of Elections and read those propositions so that you are prepared going in.
Can you just briefly point out what they are about without going into all the details, or is that too difficult?
There's 6 of them in Ulster County. So there's one about reducing the 10-day limit on early voting to... you know, be more flexible and maybe even be same day voter registration. There's one on a constitutional amendment to
help the environment.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yep. Help the environment.
Clean water, yep. Clean air.
Yep.
And there's, yeah. And we have one on, we have an Ulster County resolution that I just, you know, you got to take a read into it. But
yeah, folks really do have to read them because they're long and, yeah. Yeah. Reducing them to sound bites, I don't know if it's possible.
Sure. Yeah.
If you're about voting rights, there are a lot of things that went into effect during COVID, making some of those things permanent. The Ulster County has a budgetary thing, and we have this proposal for a clean environment in New York to be part of our Constitution, which I strongly advocate.
Wonderful. Well, I would like to thank you all. I know that it's crunch time for you and there's lots of moving parts. And so I appreciate you making the time to talk to me. And again, for those of you who are tuning in, I spoke today, I've been speaking with Yana Martin, who's running for Hurley Town Board, Melinda McKnight, who's running for Hurley Town Supervisor, and Lynn Bailey, who is running for Hurley Town Clerk and Tax Collector. And I'll link to their information in the show notes so that if you want to get in touch with them, if you are somebody who is curious about running for office, maybe they won't get back to you until mid-November. understandably, a little bit busy right now. But if you want to be in the sisterhood, I'm going to put it out there so that more women can find the support that they need if they're interested in getting involved in politics. So thank you, ladies, so much.
Don't forget to vote on November 2nd.
Absolutely. All right. Big thanks to Ian for running the show here at the mothership of Radio Kingston. Thanks to Sarah Parada. I played some of her songs today during the show. Thanks to Shauna Falana, whose music I always play. It's what we're listening to as we go out and when we come in the show. And our little interlude music. And shout out to the Dutchess County 4-H girls who I played a short interview earlier in the show. If you're interested in learning more about the Dutchess County 4-H, I'll link to that in the show notes. So get out and vote, get involved, and appreciate the sisterhood. Ciao. Thanks, ladies.